Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Hi, this is Jim Cooper, President and CEO of Isogenics International, and you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
That it is. My goodness, can you believe the date? It's the 18th. Oh my goodness, now I know some of you don't celebrate the holidays, and I get that. But for a lot of you, you're celebrating it in some ways. Now, always different. Some of you celebrate on Christmas Eve, and some of you celebrate on Christmas Day. But you know, there's something, when I think about Christmas, there's somebody that I think about. And it's somebody that every time I, you know, especially when I want to get in the mood. Now, I'm not going to play a Christmas song right away because, you know, I think that there's something about his voice that reminds me. And I wonder if you, as you listen to this, just listen up and just don't see if you have the same feeling when you hear his voice.
Never before has someone been more
unforgettable in every way.
And forevermore. That's how you stay.
It's amazing when father and son, of course, the great Nat King Cole. And whenever I think about Christmas, I always think that, you know, at some point I'm going to put Nat King Cole on and listen to him. But I really love that piece because, of course, I just finished training down in Belize. It feels like I've been home a month already, but obviously it's only been a week. And but being there with my kids and having my kids work with me on stage, especially my youngest, who really, really sees himself as being a trainer. And I think about, you know, these father-son or father-daughter in the sense of Nat King Cole duos where, you know, your kids are exposed to something. And because of that exposure, of course, the passion for that often evolves. You know, you see chiropractors whose sons are chiropractors and fathers are chiropractors. A good friend of mine, Dr. Ted Morta, you know, his brother Tom's a chiropractor, and his sister Sue, who was on The Secret, a chiropractor, and his dad was a chiropractor. You know, and I find that fascinating how that happens with families. So for those of you out there right now who are working with your children and you're in the same business or you're following the same path, I salute you. Because I think there's something pretty cool about it when you get to share that. And again, you know, I feel very fortunate, you know, to see my son. This is when he was 10, he started doing some of my elite programs with me. And both of my sons do it. It's just that one of them is really keen to do this as a living. Although I think they both have the same talent. They could both do that. I just know that with Cal, it's just not his, it's not something that he's as passionate about. But when I see Benny, you know, especially when I'm on stage and I look around over my right shoulder, normally he's sitting on stage as I'm training. So I'll often hand him the mic. And one of the stories that I really love, this was at one of my elite programs called Beyond Courage. And again, I used to do it every year in Santa Barbara, California. And now we're sort of doing it every other year. And it's a beautiful program. And toward the sort of the fifth day, one of the audience got up and was sharing. And she was very, very emotional at this time. And she was sobbing her heart out. And there were bubbles of things coming out of her nose. And she was sobbing like this. And she was apologizing for her generation and talking to Ben and what an inspiration he'd been. And because, you know, this is a pretty, you know, high level program, and there's a lot of physical, because I always say that, you know, physical is memorable, and you know, it's the experience that you create in a program often that will help drive the lesson. So I do a lot of experiential training. And of course, she's crying and he's on stage on his own. I'm running the microphone. So I'm actually kneeling in front of this woman, you know, running the microphone while he's just taking some shares. Now, remember, he's like 10, maybe 10 and a half at the time. And I'm watching him. I'm thinking, should I rescue him? Because I'm thinking even an experienced trainer, that would be a lot of energy and a lot of emotion to handle. I'm thinking, well, I'm just going to wait it out and see, you know. And I wasn't sure what he was going to do. And she spoke for quite a while. And the whole time she was really, really emotional. And she's probably early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, very, very petite woman. And so what does he do at the end? He steps off the stage. He walks over to her. She's in the front row. And he just hugs her in the whole place. Half of them are crying. Half of them are, you know, it's a standing ovation. And I was just so proud of that moment where, you know, the insight, because it's nothing he could say. And truly a great trainer, if he tried to unpack that or process that moment, it would have been the wrong thing to do. So he absolutely went with the instincts that he had. And he went and just hugged her. And he walks back on stage and he looks back in the audience and his wry smile on his face and says, well, I think that's about enough shares for one day, don't you? Anyway, so proud of him. So before we get to my guest, who is unforgettable and unbelievable, she's awesome. Let's just have a little holiday music from my wonderful Mr. Nat King Cole.
Help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight.
If you don't have an album of his, go get one.
They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's
child. And don't forget, just as a reminder, if you're buying anything over the holidays online, if you can go to our website, thekickasslife.com, and go through our Amazon button. You can buy anything. You can buy refrigerators, microwaves, computers, whatever you want. It's all for sale there. But if you do that, then we get a little bit of a kickback. And so far, we've made $8.40. So thank you, those of you that have bought something. But again, even that, you know, I'm really grateful for that because, you know, it's a start. And it just shows that people are listening and they're doing that. And we appreciate that. And, you know, everything costs money, so it's a wonderful way for you to support the show. So don't forget, over the holidays, if you have a chance to just pop in through our website, the Amazon button is there just on the right. And anything you buy at any time of year, it doesn't really matter. But again, we'll just get a little kickback that'll help the show. And of course, as more of you do it, it'll move from $8 and we may break 10. So carry on, ladies and gentlemen. With that being said, you know, my guest today, the first time I met her was at the Transformational Leadership Council. And I watched her on stage before we actually got to know each other. I actually watched her on stage and I was blown away by her knowledge and her understanding of her subject. She's known as America's Intrigue Expert. And she is an award-winning communication creativity consultant. And she's been doing this for over 20 years. And some of her clients, you know, Fortune 500 Forum, Young Presidents Organization, Hewlett-Packard, NASA. Anyway, so her credentials are long and long. And she's a respected author with 6 books. But, you know, one of her books, which is really remarkable, is called Pop, Pop. And so, you know, she really has really done a wonderful job in her book. And it's about creating the perfect pitch, title, and tagline for anything. And she's within the book, you know, there are 25 original techniques on how to interest anyone in anything in 30 seconds or less. And you know, listen to the show as she'll, I'll dig around in that and get some real gems for you. But again, I really want you to think about the book. And she also has another book, which is phenomenal, Tung Fu. But there are so many. I mean, she really, truly is one of those great gifts. So I want you to listen in as I have a chat with the wonderful, the extraordinary, and somebody who you really want to listen to, who's going to help you pop. The wonderful Sam Horn. you know, so often with the show, I always start with this excitement I feel with the guests I have. And this lady, I when I watch people on stage, especially doing the work I do, there's very few people I watch on stage that really make, I'm almost stunned into the way they control the stage or empower the audience, the way they project themselves, everything. All of the skills and traits that this lady has was unbelievably, unquestionably some of the best I've ever seen. So afterwards, I made sure that we connected, and just a wonderful connection of an impeccable person. So I am so excited to have you on the call, Sam. So first of all, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really looking forward to sharing some ideas with your listeners they can use to get some real-world results.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I always wonder where we're going to start. Let's start there with results. I know that's really big on your list. And having been in your training and watched how cleanly you lead people through the minutiae to get to the results, how did you come up with this skill set? How did you learn what you know?
What a wonderful question. And the origin of this really started the first year of the Maui Writers Conference. I had an opportunity to help start that. And we gave authors and screenwriters an unprecedented opportunity to jump the chain of command. I mean, you could sit across the table from Robert Loomis, who is the senior VP of Random House, and pitch your novel. You could actually pitch your screenplay to Ron Howard. But David, we didn't anticipate one thing. Is that all of these authors and screenwriters from around the world had 10 minutes to pitch. And the first question was, so what's your book about? Wah, 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 wah. And they did not know how to crisply condense what it was they had to say that got people's eyebrows up. So I decided that I was going to create systems and processes so we can communicate what we care about so other people care about it too.
So just because, you know, we're broadcasting to 147 countries around the world, and, you know, to make this relevant to everyone listening in, whether they're a network marketer, whether they have a pie shop, it doesn't matter whether they're, you know, the next great screenplay writer, this is relevant to everyone, right?
It sure is. In fact, if you're looking for a job, this is relevant for you. You're competing with a lot of other candidates for that job. If you're developing a website, or if you're developing a program, if you've got a product, if you're trying to pitch for funding for your startup, anytime you want to get a yes, anywhere you want someone to approve what you're doing, give you permission to do it, fund it, these techniques you're about to learn can help make that happen. So I hope you have paper and pencil or your iPhone or whatever and take notes, because we're going to share ideas you can use immediately that will get people's eyebrows up so that they care about what you care about.
So you're doing it again. You're giving me goosebumps again. You always do this. I don't know what it is with you, but you get right through all the noise, right to the results. Before we start giving some real goodies away, I want you to just describe the eyebrow test. In other words, this part when someone's listening to you and the eyebrow does its thing, and later on we'll come back to the eyebrow test, but tell me what the outcome then. When you're sitting in front of someone, why do we want the eyebrow to do its thing?
Well, here's the scene, is that I am standing there at the Maui Writers Conference. We have 100 different people pitching 100 different decision makers, all who have the power to give them a deal on the site. So what would happen is I could tell whether or not they were going to get a deal just by watching the decision maker's eyebrows. Because if the eyebrows are knit or furrowed, just kind of crunch your eyebrows up right now. Do you feel confused?
Yeah.
That means you don't get it. And if you don't get it, I don't get it, because confused people do not ask for clarification and they do not say yes. Now, just let your eyebrows kind of be relaxed there. Just kind of sit there. See, if the eyebrows are unmoved, it means the people are not motivated. They're unmoved, or they've had Botox. Now, lift your eyebrows. Arch them. Ah, do you feel intrigued, curious, like you want to know more? That means I just got my project in your mental door. And now, see, people are suffering from infobesity. They do not want more information. They want to be intrigued, and they want to be intrigued fast. So I created a whole system of techniques on how to get people's eyebrows up in the first 60 seconds so they want to know more, which means you just got what you care about in their mental door.
So, you know, you're known as the intrigue expert, and your book, Pop, which I have, you know, the How to Create the Perfect Pitch, title, tagline for anything, that, amongst other books you've written. We'll talk about those a little bit later. But let's talk about the mistakes. You know, you talk about this, wah, wah, wah. So, you know, let's talk about that so people can start to look inside themselves and say, oh, yeah, I got those. What are some of the common mistakes you're seeing with people when they have a chance to get that job, when they have a chance to pitch a book, when they have a chance to enroll someone in their network marketing business? What are some of the mistakes?
You know, David, everything we've been told is wrong. Haven't we been told to tell them what we're going to tell them, and then tell them what we told them? Boring. People are already reaching for their Blackberries at that point. So instead, here's what we're going to do. Now, first, think of a situation coming up where you're going to make a request or a recommendation. All right, now let me give you a quick example of someone who was in that situation and exactly what she said and did to land millions of dollars of funding and be selected as one of Business Week's most promising social entrepreneurs of 2010. She was pitching a room full of investors at the Paley Center in New York. And she said, Sam, I just found out I only have 10 minutes to pitch these investors. You can't say anything in 10 minutes. She said, how am I going to explain my invention or our clinical trials or team credentials or competitive edge? I said, Kathleen, you don't have 10 minutes. You're going at 2:30 in the afternoon. They will have already heard 16 presentations. Their eyes are going to be glazed over. Now think about it, David. She had poured her life savings in this company. And before we worked together, if you had asked Kathleen Callender of PharmaJet what it was, she would have talked about subcutaneous inoculations and medical delivery devices. Are your eyebrows crunched and furrowed up?
I'm reaching for my BlackBerry. I don't even have one.
See, you know, you're not going to invest your mind, time, or dime in something when you have no idea what she's talking about. So here's the 60-second opening we helped her come up with and that you can use to get eyebrows up next time you ask for something or propose something. Here's the pitch. Did you know there are 1.8 billion vaccinations given every year? Did you know half of those are given with reused needles? Did you know we are spreading and perpetuating the very diseases we're trying to prevent? Imagine if there were a painless one-use needle for a fraction of the current cost. You don't have to imagine it. We've created it. It's called PharmaJet, and in this, and she's off and running. Are your eyebrows up?
Yep.
Okay. See, so were those business decision makers, because instead of telling people, instead of trying to explain what her product was, she asked three did-you-know questions. So, everyone, I hope you have your paper and pen. Now think of the decision makers in this situation where you're going to be pitching something, asking something, recommending something, wanting money, wanting someone to volunteer for something or to sign up for some course. All right. What are three did-you-know questions you could ask that your customers or decision makers don't know? What don't they know about the scope of this problem, or the urgency of this issue that you're addressing, or the size of the market, or something, some shift in a trend that you can attribute? Like, did you know that Harvard Business Review said 87% of people hate their jobs? Did you know that the Wall Street Journal said that 67% of obesity is due to sleep deprivation? Did you see? Didn't know that. Quickest way to get people's attention is to ask something they don't know, because now you've pulled them out of preoccupation, you've turned it into a dialogue instead of a monologue, and you've just earned their attention because they're already smarter than they were 10 seconds before. Now you want to know the next step to this?
Absolutely. Hey, my pen's out. I'm writing right now.
Yay, David. And I bet you're thinking like of an email campaign or a new teleseminar series or something you're launching.
Absolutely.
Great. And see, isn't that our goal, is to have techniques you can apply immediately that turn resistance into receptivity and a no into a yes. So now the next step after asking instead of telling, is to use the word imagine, because now people are seeing what you're saying. They are picturing your point, so they're no longer preoccupied. They're totally focused on what you're saying. Now, link the word imagine to three aspects of your answer to the issue or your solution to the problem or your product that meets that need. Now, let's think back to Kathleen Callender. What did her decision makers care about? Well, they cared about those painful inoculations, so it was painless. They cared about those reused needles, so it was one use. And all decision makers care about money, so it's a fraction of the current price. Did you see how we distilled into one tight sentence, who wouldn't want that scenario? Now, the third step, bridge into, you don't have to imagine it, we've created it. Now come in with your evidence or precedence to show that this isn't pie in the sky, this isn't speculative, this is a done deal, and you're the one to deliver it. And now all of this in 60 seconds, it gives you a competitive edge because everybody else is still wah-wah, 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 and you have already got their eyebrows up, you have already intrigued and engaged them, you have already proven the need for what you're proposing and that you're the one with the answer all under 60 seconds.
Now, watching that room that day, Sam, and many, many rooms since that you've been a part of, obviously, you know, this hook, this enrollment that you've got, this using multi-sensory techniques where now you've got them sort of leaning your way, and now you're going to make them see the picture, and then sort of creating these really succinct points that answer the questions that need to be answered, including the financial question, which any business person is looking into. Do you see that people are almost stunned awake when somebody comes in so succinctly? And when you see a lot of people who are used to seeing pitches, what's the reaction when someone comes in professionally like this in 60 seconds and lays it out? Is it like a stunned silence when it first happens, or?
You know, David, what a great distillation that was of all of the contributing factors that make this so effective. You really did pinpoint all of the moving parts, so to speak, that make this make this get results. And yes, people are surprised and pleasantly surprised because this is the exception and not the norm. And Elmore Leonard is a great author. And at the Maui Writers Conference, he was asked, you know, people love your books. You know, they're real page turners. People can't put them down. Why do people love your style of writing so much? And you know what he said?
What did he say?
I try to leave out the parts people skip. And see, what we're doing in answer to your question is that we are leaving out the parts that bore people and that snore people, you know, that put them to sleep because it's obvious, or that confuse people and cause them to check out because it's just hard work to try and figure out what we're saying. So when we do this, we almost immediately get the respect of decision makers who are busy and who are craving someone who knows how to distill the essence of a message that is relevant and that is compelling and commercially viable into 60 seconds, so that they think, this is the kind of person I want to work with, this is the kind of person that I want to be aligned with, or that I choose to invest in.
Awesome. Now, when you talk about this being sort of crossing over to all different areas of business, whether you're going for a job interview, where you're going for, let's use a couple of other examples so that people who are, again, I'm really big on this relevancy. Someone's sitting at home right now, maybe they're in network marketing, for example, or they're about to go for a job. Let's talk about the same thing in a different way, just so they can hear it one more time, because I think it's so important that they do start to see, oh, this is across everything. It's across everything I'm doing right now. Whenever I'm standing in front of anyone, I have a chance to capture that imagination and plant these seeds and have people leaning into me, right?
Exactly. In fact, I'm so glad you're saying that, because, see, this isn't the totality of the eyebrow test. This is one of a dozen techniques, all different techniques on how you can capture and keep people's attention from start to finish. So here's a quick another example, okay?
Yep.
It's I have an opportunity to go to a new conference every year because I don't want to be insular. I want to be exposed to new minds and new approaches. And so I went to a conference called BIF, Business Innovation Factory, up in Providence, Rhode Island. And there's Alan Weber of Fast Company and Tony Hsieh of Zappos. However, do you know who was most impressive, most intriguing out of all of these top innovators from around the world?
Who?
It was the person who walked out. She stood center stage. She towered instead of cowered. She had basketball hands instead of the fig leaf position. She waited until the room was quiet, and then she leaned into the audience, and with this twinkle in her eye, she said, "I know what you're thinking. What's a 13-year-old got to teach me about innovation?" She said, "We 13-year-olds know a thing or two, like how to flip our hair." And in 30 seconds, 13-year-old Cassandra Lynn had everybody on the edge of their seats waiting to hear her next words. Now, a little backstory on Cassandra and why she was so effective in turning resistance into receptivity in the first 60 seconds. Cassandra and her classmates had gone down into the sewers of Providence and had discovered that they were filled with fog, fat, oil, and grease. And unless somebody did something about it, it was really going to cause problems. Well, Cassandra's the quintessential entrepreneur. She knows that if you see a problem, need, or opportunity and think somebody should do something about that, you're as much a somebody as anybody. You should do something about that. So she and her classmates formed TGIF, Turn Grease into Fuel. And every Saturday, they go to the restaurants and industrial complexes and collect that fog. They recycle it. They get paid for recycling it. And they take that money and they give it to poor families who need the money in Providence. Now, what's the point? The point is she has a great story. However, those multi-million-dollar CEOs from around the world would have just seen a 13-year-old girl walk out, and they may have never even given her a chance to hear that story because they would have prejudged that she didn't have anything to teach them. So she read their mind and said what they were thinking. So I'm asking all of our listeners, why will your decision maker say no? Will your customers say that this is too expensive? Will they say they're too busy? Will they say that they've tried something like this before and it didn't work out? Will they say that you don't have the track record or that they don't trust you? What will they say? You say it first. Because if you don't say it first, they're not even listening. They're just waiting for you to stop talking so they can tell you why it won't work.
That's awesome. So with her, again, there was a few other little cues in there as well, which I loved. You talked about she towered, not cowered. She leaned into the audience. She had those basketball hands, not little limp things, right? So I really like that imagery as well. So you're not talking about her sort of, it was what she said, but it was also how she stood in what she said, right? It was her posture played a role in this as well, right?
You know, and David, I know that you coach people from around the world on how to command people's attention and respect every time they stand up in front of a group, and you're 100% right, is that we're really managing that first minute because people make up their minds in the first minute, whether they trust us, like us, whether we have anything value relevant for them. So if we are exuding a leadership presence, if we are commanding their respect with a voice of authority, if we neutralize their objections by voicing them, if we start off by asking questions that engage them and turn it into a two-way dialogue instead of a one-way monologue, all of this in that valuable first minute is essentially ensuring these people that they are in good hands, they can trust us, respect us, they want to listen to us, and we're off and running. Want another quick example of that, by
yes,
the way?
Yes, yes. Oh, gosh. That's what I love about this. This is the whole eyebrow test. I just want to do a little kind of talk about this, is how much value you stuff into every minute. That's why I'm just going to say that before we carry on, because I know. So, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, the value add that you, it's like there's always more. There's always something else so that anyone can pull the piece they need and utilize it for their results. That's amazing. Carry on. Let me have another one. See,
oh, you know, David,
my hand's hurting already.
Carrie Fisher said, instant gratification takes too long. So see, you know, if and I know this is something you focus on, is that I believe we have a responsibility every time we stand up in front of a group to make it worth their while. And that means that from the first moment, we're constantly asking ourselves, what can I introduce that they haven't heard before? What can I introduce that they can use immediately to get real-world results? You know, what can I could propose that would cause them to rethink defaults that are actually undermining their effectiveness? And how can I have original ideas that thrill them so at the end of our time together, they feel that was some of the best time spent? So, okay, here's another example. I have an opportunity to coach top entrepreneurs and executives. In fact, I was just working with the top leaders of EO Entrepreneurs Organization from China and Russia and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and Mexico. And here was one of them had an opportunity last year to pitch the CTO of the London Olympics. And I said, Mike, how much time do you have? And he said, I have an hour. I said, you don't have an hour. I said, do you know what the first words are going to be out of your mouth? I know we're scheduled for an hour, and I also know you're 212 days out from the London Olympics. I can only imagine how much you have on your plate. I have distilled my comments into 10 minutes. At the end of that 10 minutes, if you have questions, if you want to continue the conversation, I welcome it. If you have other priorities, you'll have the information. You'll know how to get in touch with me.
Brilliant.
One of the quickest ways to win buy-in these days is to preface your remarks with, I know you're busy. Use the bridge word and, not but, I know you're busy, but. No, I know you're busy and, you know, may I have, and now ask for half of the time they expect it to take. If they think it's going to take a half an hour, you ask for 15 minutes. If they think it's going to take 5 minutes, you say 10 minutes. Because you have just, in one sentence, honored them, understood that they're busy, asked for less time than they were anticipating, you're already well on your way to winning buy-in.
You know, and this is a big one for trainers as well. You know, a lot of trainers, they put themselves in that starlight instead of the audience. I mean, a lot of what you've talked about is this conversation, you know, creating a conversation when you're in front of a big room, in front of any room where there's multiple listeners. And I love this idea then that, you know, that the mindset you have is we can do more in less time and have more results, more impact. But a lot of trainers, when they start out, because they're sort of stuck in this stardom, and that's why I think verbal vomit sort of comes up with so many people, because they think what they have to say is more important than what the listener has to do, right? And that's what I love about this piece. It's a very beautiful piece.
You know, thank you. And I always honor my mom when I say this, because back when I started dating and everything, she said, Sam, whoever does the most talking has the most fun. Isn't that great?
Can I steal your mom's quote?
Her name was Ruth Reed, and by all means, share it, because isn't it nice to put metrics to it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at the end of every conversation, I think part of our role is to make sure that the other person does at least 51% of the talking.
Yeah, nice. You know,
how can we draw them out instead of deflate them? How can we showcase them instead of show off? You know, and now we have an exchange. You know, I'm not talking about interrogating someone and it's all 95% them and 5% us. Certainly not the other way either.
No, but it's still that beautiful idea of a conversation. I like that 51% rule too. So go back to the Olympics for a second there. So this guy does this, and obviously he got the result he wanted, right?
He certainly did. And he not only did he get the contract, he got an enduring relationship with this CTO because, once again, he behaved well. You know, he showed that he could always be trusted to keep it short, get to the point, focus on what matters, and then get out of the room.
Awesome. So let's hear some more, because these are so good. Give us another one.
OK, Okay, well, one of my favorite stories and examples is based on something Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead said. He said, it's not enough to be the best at what you do. You must be perceived to be the only one who does what you do. Now, I know that many people on our call are one of many. They're one of many internet marketers. They're one of many life coaches. They're one of many authors. They're one of many nonprofit leaders. Well, we don't want to be one of many. That's a prescription for blending in, and blending in is for Cuisinarts, not for consultants.
I can't even spell it, but I can say it.
So, see, we want to break out, not blend in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we want to be one of a kind, not one of many. So here is a very, I'm going to distill this technique. You know, sometimes with clients, we spend a half a day figuring out how they can be one of a kind instead of one of many, and then how we can roll it out in presentations or books or blogs or products. So we're going to distill this. And first, I think I know the answer to this question. Have you been to Hawaii recently, David?
Yes.
Okay. Now, did you know that 10 years ago, the scuba industry in Hawaii was tanking?
I not only know that because I've heard you say it before, but no, I didn't realize that, actually.
By the way, some of these I just do for myself, David.
But yeah, carry on.
Okay. Now, why were they tanking? Well, let's do the 7 P's of strategic positioning.
Hold on. Wait, one sec. You know, I just got it. It took me a while there. Tanking. I apologize. I don't know what happened to my mind there. I was somewhere else. I was making a note. I can't let that one go. That was awesome. Sorry. Okay, I'm back on track. You woke me up. I got it.
We can blame it on a delay. There was a delay there, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's called between my ears. I think I have 9 inches instead of 7.
Great. Okay, so now let's everybody write down in a vertical line 7 P's. Because if you have a product that's not selling the way you want it to, if you have a business that's not getting the traction that you want, if you're not making the sales you want from your services, well, that was the situation with this industry that was actually about to go bankrupt. So the first P is for purpose. What's our purpose? Well, their purpose is to get more customers, new customers. So what's your purpose for this particular project? Next is person. Okay, who is the person who has the power to buy or try what you're selling? Now, this is where it got interesting with the scuba industry, because 20 years ago, when a family went to Hawaii, who in that family decided how to spend their time?
The man.
That's exactly right. 15 years ago, who in the family decided how to spend their
time? The woman.
And 10 years ago, there was a shift. Now, who's
the
deciding
kids.
How to... The kids. Oh, Houston, we've got a problem. Kids can't go scuba diving. So do you see how just by having a purpose and then by going to a person... And who has the power to try and buy your product?
Yeah.
Now we come to problem. See, you know, a 10-year-old has a lot of problems with your product because, number one, they can't get certified. Number two, they couldn't afford it if they could. They can't go down 100 feet. So, see, all these problems are barriers to entry. And the more barriers to entry your business or product or service have, the more likely you are to go bankrupt. But now let's go down to the next P, and that's premise. Premise is, why does it have to be that way? What if there were another way? What if there were a new way, healthier way, safer way, cheaper way, more fun way? Well, now you take all those barriers to entry, and you turn them on their head. So let's see, those scuba tanks that are so heavy. Huh, maybe you don't have to carry them on your back. Maybe you can leave them on the boat and just run along air hose that everyone holds in their mouth, kind of like a snorkel. And then you don't have to be certified, and then it's not going to cost so much. And you don't have to go down 100 feet and can't equalize your ears. You can go down 10 feet and swim with a huma huma nuku nuku wapu wa'a. Now the whole family can go. So a 10-year-old could decide and so... Now we have premise. We have a different way, a new way, a more fun way, a way that 10-year-olds can go. So now we come with the next P, which can either stand for process, program, or product. So premises, there must be a better way, processes, and I've got the way. It's right here in my six-month program. It's right here in my $99 product. It's right here in my 10-step process. Now, the next P is promise. Here is where you ask yourself, what do I stand for? What don't I stand for? What can my customers trust me to do? You know, why do they know why I care so that they care and have context too? So in the beginning, they gave a money-back guarantee because it was like, you can trust us because we are so excited about this. We think this is going to revolutionize this sport. We want you to try it, and if for any reason you don't love it, you get your money back. So that's a pretty good promise. Now we come down to pop. And David, you had talked about my pop book, which has 25 different original techniques that I've created that can help us come up with one-of-a-kind names, one-of-a-kind titles, one-of-a-kind brands. And there's a technique in there called half and half, because I believe the best way to create a niche is to corner a niche. And the best way to corner a niche is to coin your own name. Because if you coin your own name, you go to the head of the class. You have no competition. So see, this is a new sport that they've come up with. It deserves a new name. So it really does break out instead of blend in.
Before you reveal the name, can I share a quick story with you?
Oh, please.
So I was down in Mexico. I was with my son, who was 10 at the time, and he's a little adventurer, right? And we'd been with the dolphins, and we'd been ziplining. And, of course, I'm a passionate, passionate scuba diver, and I used to teach diving. And I really, really wanted my son to go diving. And so everything you've led to, I believe I know where we're going here. But because of all these things you just described, he was able to dictate the decision for us to go and have a lifetime experience, which it was, a lifetime memory, and now you can reveal your name. Just because it was so personal, everything you just shared, right?
You know, David, I'm so glad you did, because you really gave this soul. This is not just a tactic or a technique. You know, certainly it can save you from going bankrupt. It can help you sell more of your product. It can help your service get noticed and used by more people. It also leads to what you just described, which is a memory and experience with your son that in the big scheme of things will always matter to the two of you. Compare that to an industry, to something you loved and your son didn't and couldn't share, right?
Absolutely. You know, and look, if you come in my kitchen, there's a big picture of him underwater with this operation, holding a sea urchin in his hand in wonder. And, you know, it's on his Facebook page where there's a picture of him again underwater. And it is, it's absolutely a memory we go back to and share. And we were just in Belize last week. What do we talk about? Now he's at the age, he's 13, and now he's ready to get his diving license. So he's able now to go back into conventional diving, but to bridge that gap and to help us have that family experience that lasts a lifetime, everything you're saying, I mean, what it's just so relevant to me, and also brings to life this process, right?
And thank you, because you're really dramatically illustrating that when we started, we had an industry about to go bankrupt, out of business, and instead, it is just the opposite. It's not an overstatement to say now millions of people have had this experience. So, boy, talk about a dramatic arc, huh?
Well, the other thing that happened, like I just said, my son now wants to become a certified diver because he had such a joyous experience. Because having been an instructor, what happened was when people, there's a lot of fear around water, breathing underwater for the first time, when you have those heavy tanks on, it's cumbersome, there's a lot of things. But suddenly when you have this new method, what it does is it helps both industries. It's actually the people who have it also have other dive operations. So it's really a wonderful opening to a whole new world, right?
Then before we make the big reveal, especially, you know, and especially David, because you've given this process so much more heart, I'm reaching out to everyone on the call. Where in your business life is there something that is not selling as well as you want it to, is not performing? Maybe you're even ready to give up on it. Maybe you've poured a lot of time and money and effort into it, and it's just been a source of frustration. Do you understand that if you and a friend, or you and your brain trust, or you and your mastermind go out for lunch together and just even give 1 hour of your time and mind to this 7P process, that you too could completely turn that around? So it could become this wonderful asset to you, both financially, but also in terms of giving people an opportunity to experience something that benefits them in ways that are even better than you can imagine.
Awesome. Awesome. And by the way, just to sort of take you back, because I interrupted you, you were talking about this half and half of where
yep.
now suddenly we corner the niche, and then we name the niche by setting us aside from everybody else. And you talk about that one technique.
That's right. And here is the half and half technique that's described in the POP book. And I have dozens of examples of how this has helped someone break out. So on a fresh piece of paper, you put a vertical line down the center. So you have a left column and you have a right column. Now, your new idea or your new product or your service or your business, you just put your pen on the left and you say, well, it's kind of half this, write a word, then over on the right, and it's half this. Now come over onto the left. It's part this. Now go over to the right, and it's part this. So you just start putting down the different aspects or benefits or characteristics of your product or your service. Now, when you have about 10 words on the left and about 10 words on the right, now let the word play begin. Take the first syllable of a word on the left and combine it with the last syllable of the words on the right. Now, this one's pretty easy. Then I'll give you another one just to kind of show you how this works. Let's see. This is half snorkel, half scuba. It's snooba. Da-da-da-da.
You notice I didn't jump on your punchline.
Thank you, David. I did notice, and I'm thanking you.
No, I love it. So snooba, that's it is, snooba. And you know what? This is going back to Benny again, my son. Because it was new, it was intriguing. And because it was intriguing, we sorted out. So what is snooba? You know, so we asked a lot of questions. So the name played a big role in us discovering that he was able to do it.
Yep. Well, and let's talk about names for a second, because I know that so many of the people who listen to you understand that a good title sells books. A good title you can trademark and you can monetize it in perpetuity. A good name, you know, is a profit center. So let me give you a quick example of how I discovered this. Years ago, when I lived in Hawaii, I offered a program called Dealing with Difficult People Without Becoming One Yourself. Now, that's a pretty good title because it's got alliteration. And it's in a beat. And when you put things in a beat, you make it easy to repeat. When you put things in a beat, you make it easy to repeat. And repeatability equals memorability, which keeps you top of mind instead of out of sight, out of mind. Now, here's the challenge to that. If you Google difficult people, up comes literally thousands of entries, thousands of people coaching on this, thousands of people have written books about this or consult about this. So I would have been one of many. Well, as we said, we don't want to be one of many. We want to be one of a kind. I was lucky. At that first program, there was a gentleman in the front row at break who didn't even get up to get a cup of coffee, go outside, get some fresh air. He just kind of sat there gazing off into space. So I was curious, and I went over. I said, "What are you thinking?" He said, "Sam, I'm a real estate broker." He said, "I deal with some really demanding and arrogant people. I thought you were going to teach us some zingers to fire back at people and put them in their place." He said, "That's not what this is about, is it?" And I agreed, and he was the one who said, "I'm a student of martial arts." He said, "I've studied karate, taekwondo, judo." He said, "What you're talking about is like a verbal form of kung fu, isn't it? Eureka! Tung Fu, the perfect name." Now, see,
I love it.
And here's the good news for everybody. this is a replicable technique that you can use. Now, first, Tung Fu. When you hear something like that, you run to GoDaddy or whatever your domain service company is to get the .com. I was able to get the .com. I was able to trademark that name. I have certified people around the world. I have niched that book and literally made millions because it was a great title. Now, use another pop technique called alphabetizing to come up with other good titles. Now, Tung Fu is an alphabetized form of Kung Fu. Let's run it through the alphabet to see if there's other low-hanging fruit that we can also monetize and market. Let's see, Tung Fu, An Fu, Bun Fu, Sun Fu, Dun Fu, Yun Fu. Hey, Fun Fu, that's how to handle hassles with humor. And then there's Gung Fu, oh, Gung Ho Tung Fu for people who are really into it. And then there's Hun Fu, Lun Fu, Run Fu for when Tung Fu doesn't work. Then there's Tung Fu for lawyers. And there's Young Fu for kids.
I love it. This little... So did you trademark all of those, or you just use those as little offshoots from your Tung Fu?
That's an excellent question. I trademark the ones that I'm really going to focus on. The other terms, first commercial use usually shows like copyright law and so forth. So I have first commercial use. Now, let's give one other quick example, because once again, I could give dozens of examples. Say you have something that you care about, but other people right now don't care about it. How can coming up with a proprietary, one-of-a-kind title that pops help it succeed? Well, here's an example. Dubner and Levy had a problem. They were economists. Now, they love economy, but are you going to run right out and buy the latest book on economics, David?
No.
Probably not. You and 99% of the rest of the population. So, see, now, how can they wrap around a business, around a book, on a topic that not many people are interested in? Well, let's run it through the alphabet. Okay. Economics, economics, beconomics, economics, deconomics, economics, feconomics. Wait, you've heard of spell check? I believe in spell chuck. Let's chuck the normal spelling, come up with our own spelling, freakonomics. Boom! You have a multi-million dollar business that turned into an international consulting business, a film, award-winning film, because you took a name that would have only interested 1% of the population, ran it through the alphabet, came up with Freakonomics, immediately scaled its potential and profits.
Wow. You know what? I've got to tell you this. We have to get you back, because you realize that, you know, we're at the top of the show right now. And we're just getting started. Before we go, I want you to talk about this eyebrow test, because already, and Sam, I know this of you. Massive value already. I mean, people could just listen to this show 10 or 12 times and take so much of what you have. But, you know, we're talking about, you have a whole program called the eyebrow test, which will allow anybody really to not only just understand this from you speaking, but actually work within a sort of a program. Could you just tell me a little bit about the eyebrow test and how you make it available to people?
Well, thanks, David. It's available on our website, which is easy to remember. It's intrigueagency.com. So it's INTRIGUE, intrigueagency.com.
And remember, we'll put a link on our website for that as well, just to make it even easier. They can just go straight in and click right there, go straight to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And we have two forms. I was the top-rated speaker at two International Platform Association conventions, and I speak for Intel and Cisco and NASA and American Bankers Association and so forth. So there's a video form where we actually have the ebook with the forms and templates that talk you through these processes step by step so that you can immediately apply them to a priority project. And then I teach the technique through video as well. So you can get the video form where you and your team can think, okay, what do we care about? What do we want to break out? What do we want to drive more sales or profits? And there's the dog on the tanker story that we teach you. And there's, you've already heard about the 7 P's of positioning and the did you know. And we haven't even talked about elevator speeches today. And I have an innovative way to turn an elevator speech into an elevator conversation that helped make that particular session the top-ranked session at Inc. 500.
Well, again, you know, when you think of so many people with that, with the whole art of connection, when we look at the way the world's moving into business, where so many people are in home-based businesses and, you know, this whole elevator piece where they're connecting and having the same effect, where people want to follow them, people are intrigued by what they're doing, they're interested, they're asking questions. And that's really what you teach masterfully, right?
Thank you. That's why they call me the intrigue expert, is how can we...
And the other thing you just said, again, I want you to talk about this a little bit more, but I don't want people to miss it because you give so much juice. You know, they may have missed what you just said, to immediately apply them to a priority project. In other words, you know, as they start working with the eyebrow test, they can immediately translate it into a priority project to get the results they want. Again, they don't want to miss that. This isn't about you selling something. This is about really giving them the juice so they can take it right into the heart of their business, right?
Thanks, David. That's and you're right. We have people at all different stages of the continuum. You know, just in the last couple months, I've spoken in Boston and Ohio and Seattle and Washington, D.C. And what I love is hearing back from people like they say, you know, after your session, I went back to my room. I had a pitch the next day, and this just happened to Target. I completely changed my pitch. I landed the contract with Target. You know, I went back to my room, changed, you know, my whole approach, landed a deal with Rolls-Royce. You know, Sam, I was in Boston and a woman came up and said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "I think you opened the door for me when we got here this morning, didn't you?" She said, "Little did I know you were going to open the door for me to a $9 million deal in one of our exercises." So whether it's a home-based business, whether you're writing a book, whether you've created something that you're selling at craft fairs, whether you are an internet marketer, if you have something you care about and you would like to know how to crystallize it so it's clear and compelling so other people care about it too, choose to say yes to it or buy it or recommend it, then eyebrow test will help you do that.
Awesome. And what I love also is the value. I mean, you know, you have a $49 product, which is crazy. I mean, it should be $490. And you have a $149 product, which should be $1,490. I mean, really, truly, for what people get. And I'll tell you, you know, when you taught at the Transformational Leadership Council with some of the top thought leaders in the world, some of the top authors in the world, some of the top trainers in the world, that room was absolutely captivated. Every head was down, everyone was working, and every single person walked away with something they were able to apply immediately into their business, into their message. So, Sam, I want to thank you for your gift, your talent, your heart, your humor, just the presence you have and the care that you allow people to really discover these lessons so that they can all become so powerful and interesting and intriguing. And again, the intrigue expert, you really pass on the gift of intrigue. So thank you so much.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Hope your people are able to put it into practice and really benefit from it, as are their customers.
Now, do you still do one-on-one coaching as well?
I certainly do. In fact, I love that. So we hit the ground running and do a deep dive and come up with a 6C project or business or book or presentation. So it's clear, it's compelling, it's congruent. It's current, it's got a competitive edge, and it's commercially viable.
So what I'll do, maybe after our show, you and I can sit down and chat about that, and we'll make sure that anyone listening in can find you if they want to work one-on-one, and we'll make it really accessible through the site, okay?
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Hey, Sam, thank you. You're just amazing. The Tung Fu expert. We got to run Fu right now. See you later. Now, I did warn you she was extraordinary, didn't I? And I love that, the 7 P's. And, you know, it's really interesting, you know, watching my son do that whole snooba thing, because it was one of those highlight moments. Like I said, the photographs in my kitchen and on Facebook, and, you know, we were just down in Belize, and of course he's snorkeling, and now he's we're getting him his diving license for a sort of a Christmas combo birthday gift, and sort of open up a whole new world. And I wonder, without that snooba, without someone's creativity to make it accessible to someone so young,
the chances are, you know, we may not have even had a chance to explore that together. So it's really wonderful. Now, before I let you go, I want to play one of my all-time favorites of the old Nat King Cole. And here it is. Listen to this one.
Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep.
So, with that said, listen, I know as the week rolls around, you know, remember, there's a lot of people out there right now who need some help. And they don't have money, and they don't have, they're in a situation where they can really do with our help. And so, you know, as Kick-Ass practitioners, I really want you to think about what you can do. You know, what can you do to reach out to your neighbors or to somebody at your kid's school or your friend's school and just do a little extra, you know. And one of the things we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to go through all of our closets and get all of our old coats and the stuff that we're not wearing and take it down to the shelter. And we're planning on going down to the shelter on over the holidays and the soup kitchen and giving a little elbow grease and helping out a little bit. But again, just think about that. Think about what can you do this year to help somebody that maybe, and don't let them, they don't have to know. I mean, you know, I know sometimes it's hard to be anonymous, but sometimes, you know, those greatest gifts are the ones that no one knows about. So, you know, I really urge you to get out there and see what you can do, because I guarantee that there's a lot of people who need our help. And, you know, it's sometimes it's one of those things where it's so easy, right? It's so easy for us once we become conscious to think, you know, what else can I do? And, you know, the idea that I did that one year where I had all my friends attack a list, you know, again, it may be not too late to do something like that, or, you know, just to ask a few people to get together and think of one family that you can help. And, you know, and I often think about, it's not just, you know, the people that you see that are obvious. Sometimes it's the people that you kind of have a feeling about and are really struggling. And there's a lot of single moms out there, single dads who are, you know, really trying to make ends meet. And, you know, a little hand, someone reaching across the neighborhood or reaching across the town or village or city you're in and placing a little love in their heart, especially anonymously. Again, you leave some groceries on the doorstep if you want. But there's something we can always do, and I urge you to be thinking that way. These random acts of kindness, they go such a long way. Hey, listen, I'll see you all on the other side. You guys rock. We'll see you next week.
That was kick-ass.